It's currently 1 p.m. Coming up next is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests help you lead a more positively minded life. This program is dedicated to Ricky Rohr. Why Ricky? Ricky's a good friend of mine, but Ricky has a belief in life that she talks about and lives, which he calls it the high road, living the high road. And we joke about it because whenever there's a decision to make, Ricky says, what would be the high road to take? And what that means, it seems like, is what's the least way to get involved in some kind of craziness? Well, then why don't everybody take the high road? Everybody would like to have a peaceful life, right? Well, there seems to be two worlds. There's one world where people don't take the high road because they're just invested in being intense about other stuff. There's another road where people don't want to be too intense. So let's look at this for a minute. And this kind of continues with what we were saying yesterday about how your weaknesses, which in the particular thing I'm thinking about is your neurosis, your mentality, your mind, your weird things that you do, sometimes are being done for your strength, not for your weakness. For example, I met with a young woman today who told me that she no longer has to work. She was successful at a job she did. She completed this job, and the next thing she wanted to do was to, she had time free. And meanwhile, at the same time, she reinvolved herself in a relationship that's one of these relationships from hell. You know, you kind of get together, you love each other, you hate each other, you love each other, you hate each other. Is he going to call? Is she going to call? Is he? And this kind of thing. And she was so involved with that, it occupies most of her time. So I said, isn't it interesting at a time when you have time for the first time in your life, you're occupying yourself with all this thing? She said, yes, but it seems like so essential now, whereas it didn't seem essential when she was working. It's almost as if there's a gap that has to be filled, that people have some kind of a giant fear of calm space. Now, how crazy could that be? Everybody says they want calm. What do you want? I want peace and calm, right? I want world peace. I want everything to be nice, calm, and peaceful. Well, if everybody wanted it to be nice, calm, and peaceful, wouldn't it be? Well, Ricky's family dinner, I'm sure, is kind of ideally calm and peaceful. But most family dinners I've ever seen have got some kind of an undercurrent working, a little bit of a tornado brewing somewhere, potential blowout at any time. In fact, most relationships have that. In fact, most people have that. Well, what's the advantage? What's the advantage of instead of being calm and peaceful, what's the advantage of being crazy? Well, I claim there's a great advantage. I claim that there is something in the peacefulness that is threatening, something in it that we don't like. Maybe it's too like death. Maybe it's too like being not important. Maybe it makes you disappear. But whatever it is, if you're not comfortable with being at peace, I don't really mean at peace because that sounds like I'm being a Buddhist. I mean quiet. I mean here as opposed to anywhere else. I mean on this spot. If you're not comfortable with that, you're going to create problems over and over again. Give you an example of some of the problems. Mostly the problems are about romance. I mean, those, you could always have problems in relationships. In fact, the reason to have a relationship very often is so that you could have a problem to pay attention to. I mean, what would you rather be, single and alone without any problems, or being with somebody and having problems and fighting with them all the time? It's a hard choice, because some people would say, I'd rather have somebody there no matter what. Let's talk about triangulation. Triangulation, this is not a separate subject, it's part of this subject. You know what triangulation is? Triangulation is when when there are three people, and two people speak to each other about the third person. Now, this could be benign, it could be perfectly nice, it could be, hey, I'm worried about Joe. And you're saying that to another person, a person who works with Joe. Hey, I'm worried about Joe. He hasn't been looking too good lately. He came in late from work. And the two of you talk about Joe. Joe's on the outside. He doesn't know you're talking about him. That's called triangulation. Meanwhile, Joe meets with either of you and neither of you mention it. Or a better example, I know of somebody who went recently to somebody's dentist. Right? She was in the office with this dentist and the dentist was there. And she said, you know, said off on the side, I'm worried about this patient of yours. And then he and she get together and they do a whole plan about how to involve this patient into a third thing. And this person doesn't know anything about it. Hasn't been involved one bit. It's passing conversation. Or I know another case where a guy was worried about the well-being of a woman, so he called her son. And he said to her son, look, I'm worried about your mother. You have to get over there and be with her. That's all triangulation. Why would we do it? Why wouldn't we say to each person what we did while we're doing it? Why don't we involve them in the conversation? What's the advantage of triangulation? Well, the advantage of triangulation is like the advantage of gossiping. It keeps attention going, and it makes people angry. Nobody likes to be left out of a conversation about them. And people resent it. So why would we do things that people resent? Why are we? What are we? What's the matter with us? And the answer, I say, my friends, is because you get to exercise your neurotic muscle. And by exercising your neurotic muscle, it makes you feel like you exist, like you're important. Let's take a look at some of the relationships that people have. There are different kinds of Well, let me help out a little with this. There's a thing called personality disorders. We in the field of psychology have a group of disorders that are classified as personality disorders, which generally mean quirky kind of things that we can't give a real definition to, that people have. Personality disorders are very strong. One of them, most popular, is called narcissistic personality. You heard about that. The bottom line of the narcissistic personality disorder is that everything is about them. One way or another, it's about them. And so whenever they get in relationships, whatever they get to, it's all about them one way or another, and they're living an image of themselves. Well, a classic thing about this kind of relationship with a narcissist is that it's got this push away, pull back cycle. Now, how many of you know of relationships where a person is like pushing you away and then pulling you back and then pushing you away, or you're the one pushing them away and then pulling them back, and it's like a yo-yo back and forth? Why would we do that over and over again? Why? Well, I say it's because you exercise your muscle at pushing people away and grabbing them back. It gives you a certain sense of power to be able to reject somebody. And it gives you a certain sense of power to reabsorb somebody, to get them back. Now that sounds crazy, right? What kind of power is that? You've cried all night. You know, you're worried all night about this. But I'm saying to you, my friends, I believe we are trying. I want us to recognize that this is a form of power. And the reason I want to recognize it is because once we recognize the power in our neurotic functioning, we will be able to use that functioning as a source of power to better our lives. But we got to make friends with this invisible functioning that we do. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, just in case you just tuned in. We're talking about this kind of unusual perception as your neurotic functioning, I use the word neurotic loosely, functioning as a form of power and strength. Let's talk about a bunch of different kinds of things. We're talking about personality disorders. And people who are in relationships, you're going to recognize some of these. They're divided into three groups. Cluster A is a personality disorder. Individuals who, now remember, a personality disorder is somebody who's got an unusual, odd, eccentric behavior. In cluster A, we have the paranoid type. Now, you know, this doesn't have to be really crazy, but there's a paranoid type personality who's always worried that somebody's out to get them. There's the schizoid type, which is the other type who is very, very withdrawn and won't let anybody get near them. Let's just take those two types. You meet somebody who's very paranoid, or you meet somebody who's schizoid. Who would want to have a relationship with them? Well, the very schizoid type is very, very withdrawn. And they're like in a cave all the time. And it's clear that there's something wrong with them. Why would you want a relationship with them? Well, because they're attractive. Because you could feel your power in pulling them out. You know, you could kind of coax them out. You could kind of offer them things. And there's a certain feeling of power you get from being able to overcome the schizoidness of a person. They don't want to get close to anybody, so you get this power of being able to form a little closeness with them. Now, on the other hand, take the paranoid type. They don't trust anybody. But you get them to trust you. Again, exercise and power. So why would you want a relationship with somebody who's paranoid? They don't trust anybody, and they're not going to trust you, and they're going to keep talking about who they don't trust because it's an exercise for you to get there. So that's cluster A. Let's say we have the schizoid and the paranoid. Cluster B. This is probably the most important one, which are the highly dramatic, emotionally and behaviorally, personalities. Type 1 is the antisocial personality. I was looking at TV the other day, and I was watching a tragedy of somebody had gone into a school and shot up a bunch of people. Do you know the one that happened yesterday? The kid they were interviewing, they were interviewing him about what he saw in the school. While they're interviewing him, he's got a t-shirt that says Murder, Inc., or something like that. Nobody commented about it, but the guy's wearing it. The guy you're actually interviewing is telling you about the personality of the entire school because he's wearing a t-shirt called Murder, Inc., which is okay in his school. Why would you be involved with somebody who's antisocial? Well, okay, you feel powerless in the world. You feel at everybody's mercy. You feel weak. You get together with somebody who doesn't care, has no fear. They spit on people, they stand on people, they steal from people, they do everything wrong. And you innocently resist it and you say, oh, no, no, I can't stand it. But they are the ones doing it, so you get power. You get power to get out of your helpless position by being with somebody who's antisocial. Isn't that funny? You could always say, I didn't know he was antisocial. I thought he was Uncle Social. No, I didn't know he was antisocial. He was a little strange. Yes, he wore chains. Yes, he had a spike through his nose. Yes, yes. Yes, he was dark. And yes, he said he likes to do things with leather. But I didn't think he was antisocial. Yes, he said the car he has isn't his, and he asked me to borrow some money. But I didn't think he was antisocial. Well, of course you did, because some part of you wanted to be next to this person who is going to violate everybody, including you. So you wind up being both the victim and you wind up being attached to the power of the antisocial personality. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. I'm explaining to you something about our need for power. And I am not against this. I am not saying this is a bad thing. I'm saying if we could understand the need for this power, we will be able to use this power to fix some things and to make life better. Another of these personalities are the high dramatic personality. Let me see if I have that here. I brought it in. Yes, is the borderline personality. Let's talk about the borderline personality. If you ever hear people who are madly in love, it's usually, or it's very often, a borderline condition there. Now, what does that mean? A borderline personality is somebody who has a strong underlying hatred for people. They mask that hatred by being able to kind of get everybody to like them. So they usually have a very warm, strong, positive personality. They're very loving, they're very kind, they're very nice, they're very sweet. Behind them and underneath them is this rage and anger. When they get into a relationship, it goes into three phases. At first, the person appears sweet. Let's say it's a woman in this case. Shy, vulnerable, need of being rescued, looking for her knight in shining armor. And you feel this kind of sense of compassion because she presents herself as having been a victim of life, being a good person. And even though nothing has worked out, even though she has no money and she's in debt, and the relationships all haven't worked out, her past relationship hates her, but he can't let go of her. And he keeps calling her up. And so you're this kind of innocent victim. Meanwhile, in this state, you're the vulnerable. Remember, this is phase one, the vulnerable seducer. Your vulnerability is taking you and saying to you, be strong for me. So you become really loving of this person because you're their life savior. And when you get this kind of a person, you feel like they're a dream come true because they want to give you everything to make you happy. Everything. Though many things seem too good to be true, this is. In this disorder, there's a phase two. So phase one is they need you and that you save them in many ways and you hook up and you have this wonderful love relationship. I mean, when I say wonderful, it's the most intense of all relationships. Section two, the second phase, when you don't see this coming, is in the second phase, you're being reeled in. And when you're being reeled in, it's a different kind of thing. Her intense interest in you subtly transforms into trying to get you to have an intense interest in her. And what you do, the things you pay attention to, are her needs. And you start taking care of her life. At first, she was taking care of you and doing everything for you. Now it's all about her and what she has and the problems she has and the problems she has in life and how involved she is in these problems in life. And she's withdrawn the attention from you. Instead, the attention is now gone on the outside and she has problems with her car and problems with her uncle and problems with other things that you're putting your attention on and she has to go away. And you're understanding and you're understanding and you're understanding. And in this phase, you're being reeled in. And you doubt yourself during this entire phase until the third phase happens. And what happens is it gets unmasked. When it gets unmasked, what happens is what comes out is a rage. This is called the hater phase. Once this person has succeeded and is in control, the hateful part of them emerges, but it comes out in full bloom. And you won't believe it when you see it. In fact, it's such a rage and such a strong rage. They're so angry at you that you look at them like you've never seen this person before. It's like your dog biting you. You know what I mean? What are you doing biting me? Why are you biting me? I love you. You always loved me. Why are you biting me? Well, that's the way it gets to be in this relationship, because with this kind of person, it was a plan from day one. They were going to go from the seduction to the clinging to this aggression when it comes out. In fact, when they show you the rage that they show you, you could ask everybody around her and nobody will know about this rage. They'll say, oh, no, that does. She's such a nice person. She never has this kind of thing. But when this comes out, it is so strong and so big that it makes you doubt yourself and makes you doubt everything about yourself. And you wonder, did you cause it? Did you not cause it? But it's all part of a plan. Whose plan? Both of your plan. The borderline's plan for reengaging you in this drama so that she could eventually get to where the anger becomes again sending her off to being alone, once again starting all over again, once again starting a new relationship, once again moving her clothing from your house out to back to her house. That's the plan. It's the way it works. Or your plan to get involved in this, to say to yourself, see, I can't trust anybody. See, we pick the wrong people for the right things. And we reaffirm our muscle that says to many of us, I need to be alone. I want to be alone. And the way you get to be alone is you pick the absolute worst relationship. So the borderline personality relationship is a tough one. Really, really tough. Histrionic personality is another personality that's in this group. Because again, remember, in cluster B, it's all dramatic. It's all about drama. These are drama kings and drama queens. These are people who are always over the top with their emotions. Now, in all truth, should anybody ever be screaming? No. Should anybody ever be in rage? No. I mean, on life and death and somebody's taking your baby away, yes. But is rage ever an appropriate emotion? Never. And how much screaming could there be? If you hear people screaming, you know to yourself, oh, there's a cluster B. There's somebody who's either being histrionic or borderline. You could just tell it's coming out right now. Whatever it is, it's not real. I was passing by on television the other day, and I saw one of these police shows where they were arresting people, and I was watching them arrest one person after another, after another, after another, and then I was watching two things go on with the person. Either they were going to be really bent out of shape, or they were going to try to lie to the policeman. And I wondered about the lies that they make up on the spot at the moment. Just brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. This isn't this car. I didn't steal this car. This is my car. The person stole it from me, and I just took it back. Is one of those lies, you know, just to get yourself off the spot at the moment. And then, on the other hand, this big over-the-top kind of reaction where you're yelling and screaming and yelling and screaming. And the police, they have to deal with this all the time because they can't bop everybody over the head who yells and screams anymore. They used to be able to, but they can't do it anymore. Somebody may have a video phone, you know. So they've got to deal with it. They've got to deal with it differently. Can't even use their stun guns like they used to use. They got to be a little more cautious. So they have to understand overreactions. But overreactions, my friends, are exactly what they sound like. Overreactions. It is not sane. An overreaction is not sane. And in fact, unfortunately, an overreaction in love is not sane either. Wouldn't you? Isn't that a terrible piece of news? Don't you love the idea of people being so far in love that they just, it's so intense, it's so wonderful, you just can't beat it. Oh, let's write a book together. It's so beautiful. But it's usually something that's bent. It's usually not what it seems. The overreaction. A growing love is a different thing. A love that grows, that's nice, that's beautiful, that's a different thing. But a love that is as intense, and that it has such an intensity that seems like you can't get away from it, that it's so, that's one that's questionable. While we're talking about personality disorders, there is a cluster C, which is characterized by fear. Now, in this fear, you have four types. You have the avoidant personality. That's a person who sounds just like it sounds. You know, they avoid everything. You have the dependent personality, which is a person who's afraid to function except for you. They've got to depend on somebody for everything, a piece of advice, tell me a direction. They can do nothing on their own. Dependent personalities. Usually they stay in therapy forever. And then there's the obsessive-compulsive personality, which many of you are or know, which is the person who's always repeating and lining up the ducks and spends all their time frightened that they may be getting it wrong. So fear is the basis of these three. These patterns that people have are all meant on some level to exercise a strength. A strength in being able to avoid and stay away from something that would make you more vulnerable. See, a real love would be tender, would be soft, you'd be on your own. But these drama loves, these things are not. And what they do instead is they give you ammunition to be able to exercise your neurotic strength. And the problem with this is, of course, you go to therapy and your therapist talks about this stuff as if it's real. Well, he said, you said, I said, she said. Did you ever hear people talk that way? You hear people talking, they're saying, they're talking to you. This is, you may think this is normal for people to do this. They're talking to you and they said, so I was talking to him and he said, and then they do the entire words that he said. And then, so I said, and then you give the entire word. It's like you're sitting there and they're reliving the entire thing. And why don't you just sum it up? Why don't you just say, he said no, and I said yes or something. Because they're going to present the entire drama to you because it lives that way. So finally, we're going to be taking your calls about this and at 212-209-2900. Write that down right now. I'm going to be opening the phones to your calls in just 2 or 3 minutes. And I do want to hear from you, 212-209-2900. I want you to consider what else we have done to avoid having any kind of vulnerable space with people. And to that, I want to go to the concept and the phenomena of texting. Texting has become that way that we avoid contact. Now people don't want to have conversations anymore. Now you present your personality in words on a little thing, a little phone, and then you delete what you don't want to say and you edit yourself so nobody can ever see you. Personal conversations, they're just almost not even allowed. It's like all you're doing is putting out words that somehow represent but never really leave you as vulnerable. You're retouching yourself every minute. So texting has kind of been so attractive because it offers you this opportunity to get away from your vulnerable self and to prove over and over again that you can keep people at a distance. Hey, this is, I know it's complicated. I hope it's getting to you. We'll be able to tell from your phone calls. This is Armand DeMille. It's just about 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Let me play you some music to soften you up, and then go to your phones and dial 212-209-2900, and we'll talk more about this. Here's something for you that I love. I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Thank you. Ben Webster. Oh, the inimitable Ben Webster. Soulville. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Our phones are open, 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls and we're going to be talking about what it's like to want to have a relationship that's dynamic and painful. And when people call up, I'm sure what they're going to do is analyze other people, but what I'm going to ask you to do is try to see why you're involved in this in the first place. And it's okay that you are. Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. The reason I'm involved is because she's my daughter, and I can't get away from her. I have a daughter that's borderline. I think she fits different clusters. I think she's dependent. She's avoidant. She's a lot rolled into one.
Okay, now look, here's a perfect example where in your mind you're saying, oh, because she's my daughter, I can't get away from her.
Yes.
But of course you can get away from her.
You think I should?
Well, that's not the point. The point is you choose not to, and that's okay, but you must understand. You must understand. Now, well, here it is, because I love her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, this is it. Now, let's imagine that she wasn't your girlfriend, your daughter, but she was your husband. And you said the very same thing about him, or your man friend. And you said, oh, here he is, and he does all of these things. He's dependent. He's and I said, well, why do you stay with him? You said, because I love him. This is
no,
what
it... No. That I wouldn't. A husband, I've gotten rid of a husband before. That I wouldn't deal with. And I've had friends... some reason, a lot of my friends that I attract are very much like my daughter, and then...
So there must be some part of you, some need, right, that attracts this kind of energy so that you can control it. Now, here's what it means, and I'm going to use my what I know about some people. So you are what I consider to be a cowboy, and what that means is you have a lariat. You have this rope. And that there are people around you get crazy, and you are going to tie them up and bring them back in, and that's what you're going to do. This is the purpose of your life. Crazy people acting crazy and you making them sane. And it's not different than what I do for a living. So this, but on some level, the piece of it that's remarkable is that you perceive yourself as a victim of this. And what you need to do is to step out of the victim role and to ask yourself, what is it about this that I love? What part of this do I like? Since it's truthful to me to see that I even attracted in my friends, what part of this is appealing to me is the question. And it's a hard question for you to answer now. And it's one.
I think I can answer it now.
Well, I don't think you can. I don't think you can. Hold on for a second. I don't think you can.
Sure.
Because it would mean having to go to a place that's a much deeper than rational place to find out. But I'm willing to give you a shot with it, but I don't think that you can in the mind you're in now, because you have a mind that says the reason I do it is because I love her. Can you find a reason? Can you find a way that in some way her neurotic functioning serves you, makes you feel better? That the crazier she is, the better you feel. Can you find the answer to that? It's impossible on the radio.
Not at all, because I find it painful when she acts.
I know. So then we have a question. Then we have a question. Does pain feel good? Are you going to say no?
Terrible.
Of course you say that.
But terrible.
I know. So is there anything about terrible pain that feels good? And you could say, no, how could it possibly be? And I say, well, look at somebody working out in a gym. They say, no pain, no gain. There is something about pain that is attractive. And what we have to do, and this is a very difficult thing, is instead of pointing the finger at the other person, we have to look and find what is it about this that serves me. Now, I'm going to give you one more hint. What's your name?
Sadie?
Yes. Sadie, one more hint is the following. In your life, in interpersonal relationships, meaning love relationships, you've never been too good. at working at those because somehow they've always gone wrong. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Except for now. Now I'm better.
Okay. And I'm saying because that guess, one kind of relationship, therefore, is this kind of one with somebody who's like an adult, who's there, who you pick, and of course you always pick badly because everybody does, and you have this stuff that goes back and forth, and it's painful and difficult, but instead, you wind up with this teenager or this young woman who now you have the battles with, but it's under control because you know exactly what you're battling. See, so there's another advantage to being able to have it with your daughter because it's a battle that doesn't end.
It's true. Well, that's true, but she doesn't live with me anymore. We did put a distance between. She lives far
away.
Okay,
so I'm going to ask you this as your assignment. Ask yourself the question, and it's a very big question. It's a huge question to everybody listening in the audience. What does this do for me? And everybody will answer the question, nothing. I don't want it this way. This is the way I don't want it. That's everybody says that. And my job when you come to see me is to say to you, well, look, here's what you're getting out of this. And when people hear it and they look at it, they go, well, it's remarkable. I never thought of it that way. And it doesn't mean you should stop doing it. Thank you for calling
in. Can you tell me what the answer is? Because I don't
have an answer. How do I know?
I don't have an answer.
You have the answer.
Uh-huh.
You have the answer, but it's a great question.
I think I'm insane myself. I think the applicants will fall from the tree.
Doesn't make everybody is. Thank you for calling in. Thank you, Sadie. 212. So, you know, now that's the other thing that happens. When you begin looking at yourself, you then judge yourself. And the minute you judge yourself, you put yourself down. And when you put yourself down, you can no longer see yourself. So you have to be careful that if you're going to uncover yourself, don't do it with criticism. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
I'm calling because I wanted to ask. I seem to be in one of these relationships that you're talking about. I think maybe the borderline personality.
Uh-huh.
I met this person maybe going on 9 years, and it was great at the beginning.
Could you turn down your radio?
Turn down the radio.
Yeah, turn it off.
And at some point, we had a long distance. It turned into a long distance relationship, and just sort of a year and about 8 months or so, or a year and a half into the distancing, he somehow ended up like changing completely and saying that he wanted to have children with someone else, and that he wasn't sure, that he was sure. The going back and forth, the pulling back and forth, and. That's basically where it's ended up over another couple of years that we've been trying to. He's had other people in his life.
So here's the question now. Notice, here it is again. And this is what happens. I mean, I have this, you know, I used to be a therapist. Now I only do consultations, but I would do therapy on an ongoing basis. And people would come into my office. And one of the reasons why I wanted to stop being a therapist is what people always wanted to do is talk about the other person. So you would come in the office and you talk about he did this and he did that and he did this and he did that. My question is, what about this is appealing to you? You could say nothing. Wait, don't give me an answer because everybody's got a fast answer.
No, I don't have an answer. I don't have any answer.
So what about this irregular long distance relationship is appealing and you have to search in your soul. And you got to find something all the way deep down inside saying, you know, it's satisfying some part of me. What part of me is it satisfying? For example, what's your first name?
Mairu.
Mairu?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, Mairu, you don't want to get close to anybody. Maybe you learned as a kid that getting close to people and loving people made you very vulnerable. And you didn't like it. And needing somebody like your father or your mother, it hurt too much. So maybe, Mairu, somewhere inside you said to yourself, the only thing I'm going to do is I'm never going to get close to anybody really, so I'm going to pick people who give me trouble. And we'll be fighting over the troubles back and forth, but I'll never really get close to anyone. I fully understand it. the power that you get out of this, the strength you get out of it, that it proves to you how you could resist love. Now, does that mean that people want to resist love? And my answer is yes. Because where else are you so vulnerable? Where else is it so possibly hurt? So, Mairu, it's a big thing I'm saying to you. I know you want to talk about him being the borderline, and I'm pointing it back to you. I'm saying to you, what do you get out of it? You have to ask yourself that question all the time.
Well, I think that I have gotten to that point where I don't point the finger at him at all. I mean, there are moments where I say, okay, he's crazy, but I think I'm at the point where I'm pointing the finger at me all the time and just trying. I just gave you that as like a background, but my point is where, how can I plow through it? Because it's, I'm at that overreaction, I'm at that overreaction stage that never ends. It's like it stays at a constant high, and it's difficult.
Sure. And so the question.
But I'm trying. And the actual long distance was a temporary situation. But of course, when he came in, said that, and it turned into a total different dynamic for him and me, for him.
Yes, so here we are talking about him again. And I understand what you're saying, and I'm just saying to you, you got to drop the him, and you got to keep to the I. What am I getting out of this? Because the truth of it is, the minute you found out that this was all just a game, just meant to exercise some muscle in you, what you would find out is you would have no need for the relationship at all. When you uncover the truth about most painful relationships, it's not that you reject the person. You just are no longer involved. You feel the complete absence of involvement. The involvement is kind of the fuel to fight the battle over and over again. And I'm sorry I don't give you a direct answer as to how and why, but you'll hear. You'll hear my words. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. We're taking a couple of calls. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hi. Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, hi. I'm asking a question from the medical point of view. If you have a patient, I'm in the medical field, if you have a patient that is, let's say, bipolar, manic depressive, how do you distinguish if these clusters or personalities is part of the bipolar disorder, or it's in addition to the bipolar episodes or their behavior as a whole?
You know what they like to do, because you've got to figure how many medications can we sell.
I mean, you have the lithium. You have.
I know that's the point. The point is that the lithium sellers, they want you to see this as being, a comorbid kind of thing, and that these are codependent. The lines are so, so thin between the two. But let me ask you something about somebody who works with severe disorders like this. How do you feel doing this work?
Oh, no, I'm not a psychiatrist.
I know, but just doing this work, how do you feel doing it? How do you feel being with people who are so irrational, irregular? How does that feel to you?
I guess confused, angry.
Yeah, makes you have all those feelings of confusion and anger, and you wonder what's
going
on. You
don't know when they're lying. I mean, they tend to lie a lot, I guess.
Absolutely. Isn't that amazing, not knowing what the truth is?
Yes.
And being somebody who's trying to help. And you're trying to help, and then they're just telling you something that's not true because they want to get something out of you. Do you know that experience?
Or they're just afraid to say the truth.
Or they're afraid to say the truth. What's your name?
Sophie.
So, Sophie, have you listened to The Positive Mind before? Have you listened to this program before?
Yes, I have.
Good. See, what I do for a living, right?
Yes.
I'm the incisor. I'm going in for whatever the truth of the truth is. So, Sophie, let me ask you this. When you were a kid, what was true and what was not true? Do you remember how that felt as a kid, where you ran into that as a problem, where you didn't know the truth?
I probably didn't know it.
Yeah, no, but okay, how about your dad? Did you know all about your dad? Did your mother tell you things about... No,
why
didn't...
They were divorced when I was about 9.
So how did you know about your dad? That's why I'm asking. So you learned from your mother about your dad, right?
That he exists, right.
That he exists, and she told you about him, right?
Right.
And so did you know what was true and what wasn't true?
No, I had to learn after I was 16.
Now, learning after you were 16 was a little painful, right?
Yes.
Because you found out that some of the things you thought were true aren't true.
Well, I had his version of the story of why they divorced. In the first 16 years, I only had her version.
So here's what we get, Sophie. We get a woman who is sensitive to the fact that she cannot tell what the truth is and winds up in a profession where she has to do the very same thing all the time and is being hurt by the very same wound. Now, here's the interesting thing about it, Sophie. I claim the reason you choose this profession and the reason you do this is because you're trying to strengthen the muscle that is not so vulnerable against this kind of early childhood pain, and that you're getting stronger by being able to distinguish. You're getting stronger by that eventually, and eventually what'll happen to you, Sophie, beautiful Sophie, somewhere in this world, you know what's going to happen? You're not going to care whether they're telling the truth or not. It no longer matters. That's the end of that's the high road. That's Ricky's high road. That's what eventually happens. Then you no longer have to be invested. Is this true or is this not true?
Right.
You know?
Miss Linwood,
that's okay. Great. Hey, listen, thank you, Sophie, sir. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. 212. He's a little more than she bargained for. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Thanks for the program and for the thought that it provokes. I'm not really sure. I guess my tendency is to say, well, the other person is borderline. The other person is crazy. Though I love the other person. And I often wonder, you know, whether I'm putting up with too much. Now, the background is that the other person put up with a lot of abuse from me before I got into recovery. And so there's a lot of unsolved anger on their part. And I just wonder how much of this screaming, how much of the anger, et cetera, I should allow myself to put up with.
Okay, now, put up with is a very interesting word. It's not put up with. How much you should invite is the question. How much you should nurture is another question. Because there's a very simple way of playing in life. You make an agreement with the person you love. Say, look, if we ever get to the point where we're screaming, yelling, or hitting each other, one of us is going to leave the room and say, I'll be back later. And we will come back and we will discuss this when we could talk to each other holding hands, as opposed to when we're talking to each other screaming at each other, because screaming at each other never works. It never works. What's the idea of screaming at somebody and accusing them? You think they're eventually going to say, oh, yeah, you're right, I apologize. I didn't think of it that way. You're right, I'm wrong. No, they never do that. It never ends that way. So screaming and yelling is never right, including if you have a bad history. So the next question means is that maybe some part of you needs the screaming and the yelling. And that's the question you have to ask yourself, because the truth of it is, it takes two to battle. And if you don't want to battle, then you would just simply say, excuse me, honey, I don't want to be a part of this right now. I'm going to step away. I promise you we will address this in the future, when we could address this like two people who really can love each other and hold hands and correct things. That's the bottom line. Until then, every other involvement in this kind of stuff is a voluntary involvement on your part, which means you need something. You need this to happen. And I would ask you to ask yourself, every time you're in the middle of it, why do I need this? What do I need at the moment? Do I need this right here? And don't answer no automatically. See what part of you it fills. Because if you were feeling sleepy and then suddenly you're feeling excited by a battle, maybe the battle's just waking you up. Or maybe if you're feeling out of contact with somebody and you wind up with a battle, it may even feel almost intensely romantic to have a battle. But those battles are never meaningful. You got what I'm saying?
Yes, it's helpful.
I'm glad. Thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome, Mama.
This is Armand DeMille in the Positive Mind. You know, individuals who get involved in this, they don't think, they don't reason, they don't feel and behave normally, but they justify everything. They justify, they say, here's why it took place. The object of the two programs that I played, that I gave you this week, was to say to you, take a look inside. Find out if there's something about this that serves you. And don't criticize yourself for discovering that there is. Because we're trying the best we can, and for some of us, we're just doomed to repeat over and over again the very same stuff that we've done in the past and our parents have done. What I'm looking forward to is when each of us can evolve out of that situation into a new way of being by taking, as Ricky would say, the high road. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to, we will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of The Positive Mind. You can hear today's program on thepositivemind.com. Back with you Tuesday.